Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week on the Roundup, we're going to be covering the top three stories in international ed news over the last 7 days. And not surprisingly, COVID-19 impacts all of what we're going to be talking about today and has done for the last 2 months. And who knows how much longer it will. But certainly today is a day, April Fool's Day. I'll cut right to the chase. There are no jokes coming your way today that would give you cause to groan. So consider yourself this groan-free zone for international ed April Fool's jokes. Certainly we've had enough jokes over the last few weeks and months, and certainly not something I want to be contributing to. But I do appreciate everybody coming in to join me today. We're talking today about some of the most important issues in our field. And if for those of you who are working from home, we're happy that you're joining me for this chat on international ed news of April. And certainly it's April, even though it is April Fool's, and I said there would be no jokes, certainly if you've been around the business the last few years and seen a lot of changes coming and going in the field, you're certainly going to be not surprised to wake up some days and feel like you're in your own hellish nightmare of what our field has become. And certainly there's been a lot of change, a lot of uncertainty. Fortunately, I haven't heard yet of too many institutions that are furloughing staff or letting staff go. Hopefully, they're in good enough financial shape right now where that's not a necessity. But certainly, there are many miles to go before we sleep when it comes to the impact of COVID-19 on our field, and perhaps the worst is yet to come. Certainly, there's been uncertainty these last few weeks and even into the last couple of months. But what we're facing over the next 5 months is going to really define our industry for the next 4 to 5 years. What we'll talk about today are a couple of different news items that have happened recently with cancellation of exams and some testing providers moving to more in-home options. We'll talk about those in a little bit. But I'm going to start today with a story that is actually my most recent article for IDP Connect on international student recruitment priorities. And if you've been following that series, I've been tackling a few of the kind of real important nuggets as I see them in the field that impact what we do and are not quick, but certainly important parts and essential elements of what I consider good planning for international student recruitment offices around the world. And what I'm going to do before we get into that, where we talk about country-level planning, just a quick reminder for those of you who are unfamiliar with the Midweek Roundup, this format here. We take three news stories from the past week that are collected and distributed every Monday in our SMIE Consulting e-newsletter called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's Social Media and International Ed News, SMIE. And we put that out Monday at 9 a.m. Eastern. I put a link to this most recent article, or this most recent edition, in the comments section on the Facebook page. But you can also find that by going to smieconsulting.org and to /subscribe page, and you can sign up for the e-newsletter so you get all these stories on Monday morning in your inbox free of charge. We do pick three of those stories and profile them here on the Roundup each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And today we're going to get right into it with my most recent article for IDP Connect called International Student Recruitment Priorities, The Increasing Value of Country-Level Admissions Planning. And this is something that for many of us who've been in the industry a while, it might be something we've always thought about doing. And surprisingly, as I've talked to more and more institutions around the country and colleagues have been doing this a while, they just don't have the bandwidth to frankly get to this point where they can do country-specific planning. But in reality, what our industry is being driven to is much more focused, much more intensive, recruitment measures and the one-size-fits-all approach of the past. And that's certainly the approach that I was first introduced to the field in back in the early 90s, was that was okay, because no one had the budget to go travel everywhere, and no one even does today. Even the most well-endowed institutions might only visit 20, 30 countries in a year. But the reality is, the world's a big place, and it's increasingly getting smaller, though, in the way we communicate and how easy it is to access information. But with a few important tweaks to what we do, I think it's important and worthy of consideration as you develop your plans when you have the time, and maybe while you're working at home, you can after you've cleared your desks and inboxes of the kinds of mission critical stuff that is still ongoing and will continue to be ongoing, there'll be some bandwidth in your day to think about country level planning. And what I'm talking about here are three different elements. First of which is country-specific communication plans, then targeted social media campaigns, and finally locally hosted native language content. And these three areas are pieces of the puzzle that I think should be part of any successful country-level planning. What I'm talking about here are, when you're putting together a strategic plan, hopefully you're doing some analysis of your markets, of your key student markets. Obviously, there are resources that you can go to look at as you develop your plans. Where are our current students from? Where do we have partnerships? What countries are we strong in that regard? Where do we have concentrations of alumni, if you know that information, which most people don't? But where are those folks? But also, you want to look at the bigger picture. What are some emerging markets that we need to be getting into? And where do you go for that information? There's certainly some great resources that everybody's aware of, Open Doors, Sivas by the Numbers, and my article has links to some important content there that you'll certainly want to get your hands on. But what I also comment on here in this article is really when you're looking at your country level communication plans, you have your target markets, you've identified as primary, secondary, and tertiary. What does that mean? Obviously, primary ones are where you're getting the majority of your students from now that are important, that are key components to your incoming class each year. Secondary ones are where you have trickles of students who may be looking to potentially grow in those areas, but aren't convinced yet that they're going to be primary markets, ones that certainly need some investment in time and care and management. And then there's some tertiary ones, and maybe these are the up-and-comers where that you've just established a new partnership in a country, or you have a new agent in a particular location that might bear some significant fruit in the coming years. But this is something that you hopefully identify. But when you have those markets identified, what is easy enough to do is everybody has emails that they send out to their prospective students. And when I talk country-specific communication plans, a lot of it is in terms of adapting existing messaging to the needs of students from particular countries. And the more institutions and international offices are able to do that as part of the admissions process, the recruitment process, the better you position yourself as an institution, as an organization, as an office that cares about them as students, that is investing time and energy in them, where they're from, and the needs that they have. This can be everything from academic subjects that you highlight that they may be of interest to them. If you have country-specific scholarships, if you have any in-person or virtual events for students in that country, letting them know. Obviously, if you're traveling to that country, you want to let them know that and give them ways to connect with you while you're on the ground. But you're also talking about giving students and parents to a way to see what their future might look like if they attend your institution. And alumni success stories of students who've gone to your institution from their country, gone on to good and better things, having their success stories captured and relayed through messaging out to these students and parents. If you celebrate national events on your campus or events of cultural significance to students from that country on your campus, through student organizations or international events, highlight those. These are simple things that you can do. If you have current students that are part of your admissions process, either admissions office in terms of volunteers, student workers, tour guides, whatever it might be, capturing their stories and retelling them through your messaging out. I'm talking about your Confluent messaging. These are messages that hopefully are already part of what you're doing. And if they're not, these are some of the essential elements of what you can build into that. When I talk about country-specific needs, you want to be familiar with your markets. Not obviously just that there are many students coming from China and India to the United States. That's anyone who's been in the business 2 seconds knows that. But what you need to do is understand what the needs of those markets are, what they're looking for, what things drive their interests. And a lot of that is you're only going to get through trial and error, through actual discussions with prospective students. There's survey data out there. But getting a real-time feel for what's going on in particular countries and what prospective students are searching for and what levels of study, academic areas of interest they're in, how they're accessing information, that's all information that you certainly want to have if at all possible. And I certainly talk about some of that through IDP Connect and some of the resources that they have. But you can also look at targeted social media campaigns and even just a simple post. If it's about an event you're doing in India or in China or in whatever country you're recruiting in, you can geo-target that message just based on one of the features of any social media that you're using. So look at that and make sure that you can do focused messaging like that. If you have ad posts or campaigns that you run where you have videos of current students or alumni that you can rebroadcast through a social media campaign, through ads, that's the kind of thing that really adds value and shows that you are looking at them as individual students from a countrywide level. And the last thing is locally hosted native language content. This is particularly important when you have particular target markets and you want to better reach prospective students that you aren't already in your databases. And as we know, there are many more students that visit our websites, parents that visit our websites, than actually apply or even inquire. And this opportunity to have content that's in their native language that is locally hosted. And these are two very important pieces that show a willingness and a need to connect with local audiences. And that's something that IDP Connect also has a lot of support for. If you're familiar with Hot Courses, locally hosted language profiles that exist in 12 different formats around the world, 10 of those different languages. So really important that you have that kind of content, whether through IDP Connect or someone else. Having locally hosted content is important. Like, you know, in China, your website is not getting the views it should be getting if it's just your own institutional based wherever you are in the U.S. If you have a locally hosted version of that in China, you rise up the ranks of search engines in China and give yourself better visibility to the audiences that, if they don't already know you, and if you're not a name brand, they're not going to know you. So how do they find you? And through searches. And if you don't have a locally hosted site in Chinese, that is a disadvantage for you, plain and simple, because of the internet restrictions that China has. So when you make the efforts, and with those targeted countries that you're looking at, and have locally hosted content, if native language is important, having that as part of the puzzle is really setting yourself up for success and your institution for success in the recruitment process. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a sense for what we're talking about here when it comes to country-level recruitment planning. So hopefully that makes sense on that front. So I posted the link to that story in the comments section on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting. And I'm also shifting gears quickly to our next story. If you've read the headlines recently, you're familiar with the various colleges and universities that, due to COVID-19 and its the impact it's had on students that were looking to test either SAT, ACT, TOEFL, IELTS, whatever it might be, you've seen cancellations of tests. You've seen that universities have sent out notices that we're going test optional for the incoming class of 2020 and even into 2021. Because they aren't able to access testing right now. So that's encouraged a number of institutions to jump on the bandwagon. But my real hope is, and I've posted the link to the most recent updated document from Sarah Loring De La Garza has been updating, along with others that are part of International ACAC organization, that has a list of all the test optional U.S. colleges that are also test optional for international students. Now, this is something that's important. Being test optional has become quite the rage of late, and we've seen high-profile institutions like University of Chicago and others. University of California was flirting with that this past fall, but in spring, but they seem to have backed off, at least for the time being. But what you're seeing now is schools, particularly for domestic students, are becoming test optional. And what does that mean? That means that their ACT and ACT are no longer tests that they're going to require for domestic students. Now this gets into the news all over the world that University of Chicago is test optional, University of California schools are considering going test optional. But that doesn't mean that they're test optional for international students. In fact, it's anything but. Fully only a third of, right now at least, and the numbers have grown, it used to be only about a quarter, but now a third, only a third of the 1,000 plus institutions that are listed at fairtest.org as test optional in the United States are test optional for international students. The link that I posted is the list that I mentioned that Sarah De La Garza has been maintaining for a number of years. I was first made aware of it at the International ACAC conference at Rutgers University in 2016, and it certainly is one it's grown. In fact, back then it was about 225. There are now over 300 colleges and universities on this list. So that's good that are internationally test optional as well. So that's encouraging, and certainly one that makes a lot of sense in this current situation where we see institutions jumping on the bandwagon for test optional. I just hope it stays, that some of this sticks, that those institutions that enroll classes this fall, if they actually enroll physical classes this fall, if that is even going to be possible, and there's the jury's still out on whether that's actually going to happen yet, whether you're actually going to be physically able to enroll students on campus this fall, or if it's going to need to be delayed till January for on-campus housing, on-campus education. So we're looking at a period of incredible change in our industry, and test optional is one important piece of that puzzle on the admission side that all of us need to be aware of if we're not already, and our institutions, if they aren't already test optional, should be looking down this road, because it's not one that's going to be resolved anytime soon, but is one that, when you think about what test optional means, it means for international students for whom these tests are not designed, if they've learned English, they've most likely learned British English. They've not typically been in the United States for their high school education. And certainly these SAT and ACT tests are not designed, as much as I say, they're not designed for overseas audiences. And that's by design. They're tests of academic ability as it relates to preparedness for college study. But this is where I think the schools that are making decisions now to go test optional, whether they're identifying that as all COVID-19 related, or if it's potentially part of a broader desire and need to be more flexible in their admissions policies. And that's where I come down. More than anything else, this is a time where institutions need to be thinking, what can we be doing to make our processes simpler? They're far too complicated. There are so many more hoops to jump through for international students than they have in any other countries in the world. And frankly, we put ourselves at a strategic disadvantage with how complicated our admission systems are. And yes, the Ivies are always going to admit less than 10% of their class. Maybe this year they'll sneak up closer to 9%. But the reality is, our processes, when you look at the British system, the Australian system, New Zealand, Canada, we are the most complicated system in the world to apply to. and we will continue to lose students who look at our systems compared to the compared to other major English language speaking destination markets as way too complicated and not worth the extra time and effort, even though the quality's great and the reputation is good, maybe even quality for money, that will still hold value for a number of students. But for some, it's going to be far easier to look at other options when it comes to their studies. So we'll see where that goes. But I'm hoping test optional really becomes more mainstream in this regard. And I hope more of my colleagues convince their institutions to get on the bandwagon with this. In addition to the SAT AC test optional list, when we talk about the great number of changes that are going on with exam cancellations, you have seen, and this is encouraging, we have seen a number of providers, particularly on the English language side, now looking at other options for their for prospective students. You've seen, we already knew about Duolingo, and we've talked about that on a number of occasions, where there are over 500 U.S. schools that are accepting Duolingo, which can be taken anywhere in the world. Doesn't have to be at a testing center. That you now see both ETS with their TOEFL, and IBT, and GRE general tests are now going to be offering at-home options. And it's a little bit complicated on that one. Starting just this past week, ETS started offering IBT, TOEFL, and GRE in its at-home solution. ITEP is another one, English language test, perhaps not as common as TOEFL, IELTS, or PTE Academic, or even Duolingo, but ITEP's certainly been around a bit longer. They've now added an at-home option as well that allows students to take these exams, these English language exams, which no one can get around these in terms of admission, direct entry to academic programs, either undergraduate or graduate level. But these ETS and ITEP moves certainly give a bit more importance to more flexible policies when it comes to what you'll accept as institutions. So I certainly think it's worthwhile that not just because exam dates have been canceled or aren't available right now for international students, but really the reality of, hey, we could be in a period where students might not be able to go to physical test centers to take these exams. We need to be looking at other alternatives that allow for flexibility in our admissions policies in terms of what we'll accept. Now, English language program directors who maybe have responsibility to review versions of tests may have their concerns, and rightly so, with regard to security, quality control, and really content of exams that might not meet what they consider true minimums. But really, the value of having policies that are more flexible and adaptable to changing circumstances and changing global circumstances, not just local circumstances, I think are ones that will put institutions who do make those shifts in a much more favorable position when it comes to looking at new options and continuing to appeal to students that might otherwise have looked elsewhere. So we'll talk about what that looks like more down the line, and I'll have some more thoughts for that in upcoming blogs I'll be writing. But in terms of one of the biggest impacts that we're seeing as a result of the pandemic is we've talked about the test cancellations. We've already seen it from IELTS and TOEFL, GRE, SAT, ACT. AP is working on some, and it was just an IB exams being canceled as well. There's a webinar this morning International ACAC put out. I wasn't able to attend the actual webinar, but certainly will be looking forward to hearing that, the replay of that, or the recording of that, because that there was going to be focus in that one on what IB's doing in relation to having to cancel May exams. What are the options? The makeup's going to be another area where this is going to be felt significantly is in the UK, where you saw A levels being canceled, and that's something that is just remarkable that's actually happening. Not considering the circumstances, but we just heard this morning that Wimbledon is being canceled as well. It won't be run this June, July. It's not being postponed, it's being canceled altogether until the next edition in 2021. So the UK is being impacted right now very hard by the pandemic, and canceling A-level exams is forcing US and our UK institutions that relied on those exam results to admit students for the fall term. Those exam results come out in July, and 3 weeks later, they're admitted and on campus starting September, October. So that's changing for them. So what are the UK universities going to do? And the story that I'm posting now from the national, and there's other stories that have covered this in the UK as well. But this one says that UK universities could be making unconditional offers with the cancellation of those exams for the coming May, June period. So it's going to be a time of incredible change and uncertainty that you're already seeing on your campuses, and the storms are not over yet. And certainly I'm happy to talk to any colleagues who are experiencing some of those now, if they're looking for potential solutions where they can be working to put together alternate plans. And certainly, as we briefly alluded to last week, the institutions who adapt now with flexible admissions policies and looking forward not just to the fall but to the spring term is looking at, okay, what are we going to do if, in worst case scenario, a plan A, you got your plan A hopefully to get the students in by the fall term, whenever your classes begin, August, September, but what if you can't? What if they physically can't get to you because the visa consulates and embassies aren't going to be reopened in time to get all the students in for this fall? What are the alternatives going to be? Do you have the ability or bandwidth? Are you just going to defer them to the spring and hope they don't go elsewhere? Are you going to give them an option to start virtually? And this is where I think the most evolved institutions and flexible institutions are going to look towards moving for this coming fall term. And this may not just be with international students that can't get visas to come in. You may have to do this with your domestic students in case residence halls and on-campus events and risk management people are going to be certainly have a lot of pause for concern over the next few months when it comes to starting the new school year. What's that going to look like? Is it going to be business as usual? Are there going to be other restrictions put in place that you're not aware of now? So there's a lot that could change between now and then, and certainly planning for worst case scenario, second to worst case scenario, best case scenario, and somewhere in between. Looking at different options internationally is going to be important, because I know it's going to happen domestically as well. Your institutions are going to be looking at other ways, worst case scenarios for the campus. Hopefully you're plugged in enough up the chain at your institutions to understand what's going on there. And you need to be able to react fairly quickly, I'm assuming, when it comes to what's happening with your cohorts of internationals. Is there a way to facilitate them for online learning for the first term? Obviously, they won't be in the country, so they won't need the I-20s yet. Maybe that gets forestalled until you know embassies are back up and running and clear their backlogs so that they can maybe get here in January. So that's probably the best case and probably the most realistic option, I think, for most students, most institutions in terms of enrolling students for the fall. It's not going to be the traditional fall term. I guarantee you it won't. So the more prepared you are for that change that's coming and better able to adapt your policies and procedures in a timely fashion, because the more you can do that more quickly you can do that, the better prepared you're going to be for a future that's right now a very uncertain one. So that's what we have for you tonight and this week on the Roundup. We look forward to touching base with you again next week. So do that subscription to the e-newsletter on smieconsulting.org/subscribe. And then we'll also get the replays out on YouTube and our Facebook page shortly. And for those who are listening on the podcast, God bless you. I really appreciate you taking a part of your day to listen to us once a week. So that's all for now, and have a wonderful week wherever you are. Cheers.